Hey, welcome to Neighborhood Twin Mom. Today I have Nicola Jensen on the show. We met at a family camp and she has a really cool story of how each of her kids have come to her family, including using an egg donor for her boy-girl twins. Something was off with the audio during this episode, so I apologize for some of the tracks being a little bit off, but I hope you stick with it because this episode is it's awesome. I love Nicola's story. And if you love it as much as I do, I would super appreciate it if you would share this episode with one of your friends. Hi, I'm Amber. I have five young kids, including a set of boy-girl twins. My kids were all born within 6.5 years of each other. It's a lot of kids in a little amount of time. It has been quite the journey parenting all these kids so close in age. I've learned a lot over the years, and people often come to me for advice. But let's be honest, I don't know everything. And in those cases, I turn to other moms for their advice. I believe that people living it and doing it are the real experts. So that's why each week I'll sit down with a real expert, one of my friends, a mom like you, to get all the advice you asked for, and some you didn't. This is Neighborhood Twin Mom. Welcome to the neighborhood. Nicola and I met at a family camp, and I kind of stalk twin moms. If I see two little matching kids, then I just have to meet the mom. And our kids were in the same group at the summer camp. My daughter said, "Mom, there's twins in my group." And I said, "All right, show me her mom. Let me go talk to her." And in my head, I'm like, "Oh, I got to have her on the podcast." But I'm like, "Play cool, play cool, play cool." But then when I started hearing your story, I was like, "Oh, I just got to ask her," and it blurted out. And luckily you were so gracious to come on, and I'm so excited to share your super unique twin story with everybody. So why don't you go ahead and just tell us how many kids you have and introduce your family a little bit.
We have five kids, and my husband and I have been married for almost 18 years. My oldest is 10, and my youngest is 3.5. So I'm similar to you. We had five kids in less than 7 years. It was a little crazy. All my kids came to our family differently. Well, kind of. My two oldest are adopted, and they have the same birth mother. So that's how we got to adopt both of them in really close succession. Berlin is my oldest, and she was not quite a year old when we found out that the birth mom was expecting again, and she wanted us to have this baby as well. So those two are 17 months apart. And then before we had adopted, we had tried to do fertility treatments. We did everything. We did Clomid. We did intrauterine insemination 3 times, never worked. And then we did IVF, and that's when they found out what's wrong with why we couldn't get pregnant, and it's with me. And I actually listened to your story on your podcast and how your husband was like, it's not me, right? Yeah. That was it, your story? Mm-hmm. That's exactly what happened to us. My husband came home and he's like, "My boys can swim, it's not me." So what I have, actually, I looked it up because I never remember the name of it. And the reason why I couldn't stay pregnant. I have what is called oocyte maturation failure, and it's called bad egg syndrome. So my egg, once it gets fertilized, divides at half the speed it's supposed to. So it never gets to be a stable embryo. That's what happened. So we did IVF and we found that out. They retrieved 25 eggs and all of them were bad. It's a little high for an IVF cycle. I think the average is about 12. So we were double what the average was. They retrieved eggs and then they basically watched them 24/7 for 4 days until the embryo is stable. And they called us on day 2 and they said, "Look, these are not good. None of them are good." Almost all of them had died at that point. I think we had 5 or 6 as of day 2. They're like, "We're going to keep watching them and see what happens." Day 4 rolls around and we show up to the doctor's appointment. He's like, "You have 2. They're both considered poor." So they have a scale and poor is the worst. They're like, "We're going to use them anyway. You've gone through this whole thing. We're going to give them a try." And I actually got pregnant, but I miscarried. And that was not completely unexpected. So we put it on hold for a while. We tried to pursue adoption. We met with a caseworker and he basically said, "Don't do adoption. It's the worst." He was like actively talking us out of it. So we're like, okay.
What was his reasoning?
It takes way too long. People back out. It's lots of heartbreak with very few success stories. Like, he just was very negative. I was like, why are you an adoption caseworker? This clearly is not what you want to be doing. Anyway, it was a very interesting experience.
Okay.
Yeah. We went back and met with the doctor, and he said, your best chance, because nothing else was wrong with me. They're like, we think you'll be able to carry a baby if you could get pregnant. So your next best option is donor IVF. We looked at donors that they partnered with at the doctor's office. None of them really like stood out to us. Plus, it's a little weird.
To look at a donor is like they hand you kind of like a binder, right? Where you
Yes, pictures of them as children and adults and what their likes and interests are, what kind of student they are. It's very interesting. It's like online dating for an egg.
Yeah.
It's really weird. Our doctor mentioned, you know, a lot of times a family member or a friend will be your donor, and then it's less expensive because the donors they work with get compensated for their time and whatnot. If you had someone willing to do it, you could. I have four sisters and decided to go with my one sister, and she did it. And we did that. That was in 2009. And we did it. Everything went well. They retrieved 12 eggs and they retrieved them, and then they did the transfer and it didn't work.
Let's back up a second. So you have four sisters. Why did you approach that sister, and what was that conversation like?
You should know that my sisters and I are very close, and we have always pretty much been, as adults, we've all been really close. I'm the oldest of the sisters. I have older brothers, but I only had one sister at the time that was married, and the other three were not. One was still in high school, so she wasn't even an option. And I had one sister who flat out said, that's really weird, I'm out, which is okay. I was fine with that. And then my other sister, who is actually very similar to me, like we look alike and we have a similar build. And so I thought, well, you know, if you're going off just like looks, she'd probably be a better choice. And then my other sister doesn't look like me very much at all, but we are very similar in personality and other things. So the sister that's similar to me in personality, she was married, but she was fairly newly married. I think maybe a year and a half or something. She was finishing school. She did not want to have kids right away. She was pretty young. She was 20, or 21, I guess. And she's like, look, I have all these eggs I'm not using. She was totally fine with it. In fact, she volunteered. She's like, I'll do it.
So did you kind of like open casting call to your family? Like, hey, we're looking, who's interested?
Or did
you approach her? Okay.
I made phone calls to all my sisters and I said, look, this is what we're thinking about doing. I don't want you to feel pressured at all, but if you are interested or if you would be willing, just let me know. And so one sister's too young. The other one said, absolutely not. And then I had these two sisters. One was more willing than the other. And my sister, who wasn't married yet, was like, that's going to be really awkward if I never have kids of my own, which I get, like totally. So she said, I would be willing to do it if no one else will. But if our other sister would do it, that would probably be better, which I agreed with. So I asked her and she just said, oh yeah. And she had just graduated from college and it was the end of the semester. And so she had a little lull of time. She had a job lined up, but she said, look, I want to do this for my sister. Would you guys like hold my job for me and let me take a month off to go to Arizona and do all this stuff? I'd be gone for about a month. And I don't know if any boss would do that, but her boss was adopted. And so she's like, absolutely. And her kids were either adopted or they did it fertility treatment. So she was very understanding. She said, sure, I will hold your job for you. So my sister came and lived with me for about 5 weeks. And it was actually really fun. We had a great time. Anyway, that was 2009. It didn't work. Then we moved. And when we moved, my husband's aunt said to us, oh, you should really consider adoption. And she didn't know that we had gone and already talked to him. And I said, oh yeah, we did that. It was horrible. We're not going that route. And she said, well, I had a friend who just adopted a little girl, and the caseworker for our area is amazing. She's this wonderful woman. You should really go talk to her. And we did. I was not in a good headspace. I was like, if she doesn't have answers to these questions, this question, this question, this question, I'm not doing it. And in her introduction, she said, come on in. My name is Hannah. Let me tell you a little about myself. And in her 5-minute introduction, she answered all of my questions. And she basically said, look, I think I can get you a baby. I think you guys are nice. You're normal. You're still young. You're not, she did. She was really funny. She said, you're not weird looking. That's going to matter. Because these young girls, they want someone that looks friendly and kind and, you know, anyway, she was just funny.
It's superficial, but it's true.
Yes. And a lot of what they go off of is looks. So she's like, you need to get some nice pictures taken and have that put on your online profile. So that's the first thing that they're going to see and that's going to grab their attention. So we did the paperwork. We flew through as fast as we could and we were done in about a month. My daughter that we adopted was born 9 months later. So it was very quick.
So you tried to do the egg retrieval, then you adopted your son. What made you decide to go back to that route again?
Yes. My husband was done. He was like, we got one of each. This is perfect. We're a little bit older now. When we adopted my daughter, I was almost 31. Tanner is my second. So we have a girl and a boy. And it was right around his second birthday. I got a letter from the fertility clinic that said, you still have embryos. Your storage that you paid for back when we did it is up. So you need to make a decision. You can continue to store them. It costs $500. Or if you don't want to use them, you can donate them to our lab. We'll use them to improve our practices, basically. You can donate them to another couple and see if they can use them, or you yourselves can use them. Those were our choices. And I was pretty burnt out from the 2 rounds of IVF I did. It's very, if you know anyone who's done it, it's very hard on your body. And you have to take a lot of medications that you're not used to taking, and it's just really rough. So I didn't want to do that. I knew that, but I also couldn't in good conscience get rid of them. That was one of the options. You could have them destroyed. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't. So I said to my husband, I said, what do you want to do? We can donate them to the lab. And I was okay with that because I'm kind of a medical person. I think it would be great if they could learn from them, if I didn't end up using them. And he was like, no. And I said, well, do you want to donate them to someone else? Because that seems a little weird. And he's like, no. I'm like, well, then we got to use them. That's our option. And he was like, uh-uh. So he was like, helpful. He said, maybe we should just pay for the storage and then we'll think about it and decide. But here I am not getting any younger. So at that point, I was 36. And I knew that it got more complicated as the mother ages. So in the letter, the doctor had said, we've changed the way we do these things now, and our success rate for people in your age range is much higher. It was like 85% success rate, which is great. So they said, come in for a free consult. And I was like, no, September. I think I told you this when we were talking, but I felt like someone was tapping on my shoulder saying, you need to do this. And it was very, very insistent. And I really, you met my daughter, my twin daughter. That is her personality. I really feel like that was her being like, mom, I need to come. You need to do this so that we can get there. So September, I finally got up the nerve to approach my husband again at Thanksgiving and say, look, I don't know why, but I feel like this is something we should do. And he said, I don't want to do that. And I was like, okay, cool. It's not on me anymore. I'm willing. You're not willing. Let someone else's shoulder be tapped for a while. But it didn't really affect him that way. And it was still very like this prompting of, you got to do this. I don't know why, but I needed to do it. So in January, we met with the doctor and he was not encouraging. He looked over my history. He looked over my paperwork and he said, well, that letter did say that our success rate has gone up, but you're kind of a special case. You've had a failed IVF. The embryos you have left are not the best. We used the best in that transfer in 2000, 9. So these are not as good. They're better than the first ones we used, but they're not great. And we had 3. One of them was really not great. And then 2 were about, like, I think they call them fair. So kind of the middle. They're not great. They're not bad. He said, I know the letter said 85, but I'd probably give you guys about a 50% chance. It's just, again, not super good. And my dear friend said to me, she's like, oh, screw statistics. Everyone has a 50-50 chance. It either happens or it doesn't. It doesn't matter what your statistics are. You're not a statistic. It'll either work or it won't. I kind of got my husband on board. Sort of. I think I told you, he made me sign a contract that we would not do any other steps to have children. We were done with adoption. We were done with fertility if we tried this, even if it didn't work. And I was like, that's fine. I know we're...
Was this because he didn't want to have more children, or it was more like, I can't emotionally go down that road again?
I think he was fine with having only 2. When we got married, we wanted more. But as we got older and we realized it might not happen, we kind of were like, you know what, whatever we end up with is okay. And so I think it was a combination. I think it was, he knew how hard it was on me, and he knew how hard it was financially to do that. And anyway, so he agreed. He's like, okay, we're going to do this because you feel really strongly about it. I'm not 100% sold, but we'll give it a go. And then my sister was getting married, so we postponed starting the whole process. And she got married in April. And on her way home from her wedding, we stopped to see his grandmother. Should I tell you this part?
I don't think so.
This was kind of cool. His grandmother was getting really old, and she said a lot of kind of off the wall stuff because she was getting old. She was kind of losing some of her memories and whatnot. She marched into the room and she said, I need to talk to you. And he was like, okay. And she pulled him out into the hallway. I wasn't there. He told me this later. And she said, I have inheritance money for you. And the interest rates are terrible right now. So your money's not earning any interest. So I'm just going to give it to you. And I want you to use it wisely. I want you to tell me what you used it on. So I know that it went to a good place. So unbeknownst to her, we had sat down and figured out exactly how much money we needed. Because IVF is expensive. Donor IVF is about double that. But the expensive part we'd already done, the retrieval and all the medications that you have to take to make the retrieval possible, is really the bulk of the expense. So we figured out, right down to gas money to get back and forth, because we lived about 3 hours from the clinic. And we figured we needed about $5,000 to cover the medicine, the procedure, and the gas to get back and forth. And she wrote my husband a check for $5,000. And he almost broke down right there. He's like, Grandma, I'm going to tell you right now what I'm going to use this money for. And he said, we've been trying to decide what to do about this, about these embryos. And the one thing that was holding us back was that we were going to have to dip into our savings that we'd worked really hard. Because IVF is so expensive, we went into a little bit of debt to do it. And we had finally paid that off, and we paid off all our other debt. We decided we're just going to get out of debt. We only had our house payment, and we had saved up $10,000 into the bank account. I don't know if you follow Dave Ramsey. My husband's a big fan. That was part of the process. That was the one thing that was really a hard thing for us. We knew we were going to have to take money out of our savings that we'd worked really hard to replenish after doing all this fertility. And adoption's not cheap either. So we had built it up and we depleted it and built it up and depleted it. We were finally back where we had wanted to be. And she gave us that money. And he's like, okay, I get it. We are supposed to do this. So we started the process, and it was interesting because I did all the other things, and I was a nervous wreck, and it was really hard on me, and I was emotional. And you unless you've experienced the wait between when they take the eggs and then put them back in you, you have 10 days to wait for that positive test. It's so nerve-wracking. So I knew what was coming, but I think because I was so very sure at that point what we were supposed to do, that it was like, even if this doesn't work for whatever reason, this is what was supposed to happen, and I'm okay with it. I was at peace with our decision, regardless of the outcome. That makes me sound really calm and collected, but it was like a 9-year process to get there. So we did the transfer in June, and we found out the end of June that we had twins. And the doctor had told us, he said, both these embryos are pretty much identical in quality. If one of them takes, your chances of the other one taking are very high, like 75%. We knew right away that we had two babies in there and they were both healthy. So anyway, this is a really long way to tell you about my family because there's more.
No, it's great. Yeah. Then
I had just weaned. I breastfed my twins, which, well, that's another part that we could talk about if you want to. But I had just weaned Jetta and I was in the process of weaning Cash, their boy girl, Cash and Jetta. And I was not feeling very good. And I realized that I had not had my period for a while. And I had been pregnant before on my own, but I always miscarry about 7 weeks. That's just how that disease I told you about works. I can get pregnant occasionally, but I always miscarry. So I called my doctor's office and I had already mentally prepared myself for like, this is really inconvenient. I hope that my body can take care of it so I don't have to get a D&C. I just don't need more doctor's appointments. I called them and I said, look, I'm pregnant. You know my history. You know this baby is going to end up in a miscarriage. Do you want me to wait? I was so clinical. Do you want me to wait until I miscarry? Or should, like, how does this work? And the nurse was like, well, why don't you come in and get a fetal heartbeat, see if there's a heartbeat, which I've done before. I've done this appointment. It's always, there's no heartbeat. So I didn't really want to do it. But I was like, fine, whatever. And they're like, we're about a week out. Can you come in a week? And a week would have been 7 weeks. So I was like, okay, there's not going to be a heartbeat. So I had mentally prepared myself for that appointment. And I was not happy. I was not smiling. I was just like, let's just get through this. I can do this. Someone was watching my other children. And my husband kept saying, oh, this, it's going to stick. And I was like, no, it's not. Never sticks. We know what's wrong with me. And people were saying, oh, you know, now that you've had twins, maybe you'll have others. I'm like, no, what's wrong with me isn't fixed by pregnancy. It's not something you can cure. I went to my appointment. The midwife said, she looked at me. She looked at the screen. She looked back at me. She's like, if I didn't know your history, I would say, congratulations, everything looks great. You have a healthy fetus. And I was like, what? And she's like, but since I know your history, this is unusual for you. So we need to monitor you until you get past like 13 weeks. Yeah. Had a totally healthy, normal surprise pregnancy. And because I had this disease that is basically bad eggs, we used to call my son the good egg. He's a good egg.
Yeah.
That's so he's my baby.
If you're looking for a special gift to give someone and like to make people cry, which as you know is not too difficult for me, but I do love a custom gift, you need to check out JJ and Lou on Etsy. A fellow twin mom creates custom water paintings of families and homes. I have one on my mantle of my family. It's awesome because I didn't have to pick out or pay for any coordinating outfits, and everyone in the picture is, quote unquote, looking at the camera. For a limited time, use promo code TWIN20 at checkout for 20% off your custom order. I've ordered a few unique gifts, including a graduation portrait for a high school senior. I've commissioned a painting of the building where my friend was married and made my mother-in-law cry when I gave her a painting of her childhood home. JJ and Lou's shop is easy to work with, and I've been pleased with all the paintings I've ordered. Head to the show notes or link on my website, neighborhoodtwinmom.com, for a direct link. And don't forget to use promo code TWIN20 for 20% off your order.
So tell me, so they are close in age as well. So you said all five kids were born in 7 years.
So my first two are 17 months, and then we have a 3.5 year space. And then the twins and my baby are 22 months apart. So I had three in diapers for about a year.
I think a lot You've of been there. Twin moms are in that same club. I think I might have even, no, I didn't have four in diapers, just three. So tell me what it's like with your sister, who is, you know, I don't know the correct term, like genetically she's their mother. What is that relationship?
That is the correct
term. Okay. How is their relationship with your twins? And then how does your husband feel about that?
Okay, let me address the husband first. That'll be easier. My husband has a very interesting sense of humor. We never really talked about it too much. He always thought the whole fertility thing was a little weird, but he was willing to do it. So he's like, whatever. Like at that point, he was like, I'm doing this to make you happy. I don't really care too much, but we don't need to talk about it.
Got it.
And then his sense of humor kicked in. And so after we found out that we were actually going to have these babies, he called her up and said, well, I guess we're going to find out what our kids will look like. And she's like, please never say that to me again. My sister and I are very close. All my sisters are close, but she is probably the one I am closest to because our kids are the same age. She got pregnant with her first the same time that we applied for adoption. And our oldest children are 8 days apart, and they're very good friends. And so our kids have kind of grown up together. We spend a lot of time together, holidays and spring break. And so she is really close with my twins, but I feel like she's actually close with all my children because we see her a lot and because of the children being the same age. So her oldest and her third line up perfectly almost with my kids. And then we have others that are in between, but they're close. She was very invested in my pregnancy, though. She would call me when she knew I had a doctor's appointment. She wanted to see ultrasound pictures. And her friends actually said to her, you seem really invested in your sister's pregnancy. It's kind of weird. She's like, well, it's not that weird if you know the story. And she told them. And so they coined the phrase that my twins are her sort of babies. And that's what we refer to them as, and it's a joke. But my daughter has her build and her nose. All of my siblings have the same nose except for her. She has this teeny tiny little nose, and my daughter has that nose. And that when I had them in the hospital, she called us, wanted to FaceTime, like immediately. She just wanted to see them, make sure they were okay. And I showed them to her on the phone, and she goes, that little girl has my nose. And she does.
And she does.
For the most part, they look like my husband's family. Like, they don't look a ton like her. She's a brunette. I'm a redhead. And my twins are blonde.
Yeah.
Very blonde. And they look a lot like my mother-in-law. And although I will say that I see her son, I see facial expressions and mannerisms in my son that I can tell they're more than just cousins, it seems like. They are. But
right. What do your twins know about how they came to your family?
They don't know a whole lot because they're five. And in order to explain to them the details, they need to have a basic understanding of how that works. And they don't really comprehend it yet. However, I'm very open about it. I talk about it a lot. And my older kids know, because they knew they were adopted. We have open adoptions with their birth mother and her family. So they knew that I couldn't carry them in my stomach. So when I got pregnant with the twins, I actually took them to a lot of my doctor's appointments. And I explained to them, you know, my stomach didn't work for a long time. These doctors are trying to help me. They're trying to make it work. And so they were actually really good with that. I feel like kids can handle a lot more than we give them credit for, if you can explain it in terms they understand. And so, you know, they were good. They were very happy to have the brother and sister. They accepted that even though they couldn't grow in my belly, the twins could. But it was a little tricky explaining number five, though. Because I'm like, yeah, it only works because I went to all these doctors and it's not going to happen again. And then it did. He's actually the odd man out. I have two adopted. I have two donor IVF, and then he is the one who is a natural. But as they get older, we will tell them more. They will know. It's not a secret. I feel like they have a right to know, and it's just all about timing and working into that, and we'll probably build on it as we explain it more in depth.
You already told me this, but you had all of those donor eggs, and then you used up the two for the twins, and then the rest of the eggs.
We don't have any more.
They're gone.
So we had 12. And only 6 survived the fertilization process and the growing, which is pretty common. You usually lose about a third to a half, depending on the situation. So we had 12. We ended up with 6. One of them died when they were doing something. I don't remember what happened. So we used two the first time when it didn't work. And then we had these three, but one was such poor quality that they're like, it's not going to take. But the other two were even. And they're like, if this one takes, this one probably will too.
Yeah. So then you didn't have to decide what to do with the rest of them because they were gone.
Correct. Yes. They were, we had used them all up and we were done.
So. All right. So tell us what your advice is for someone who's going through infertility and also someone who is trying to support somebody through infertility.
Okay. That's a big one. Now you got to remember I'm on the other side of it and I've had a lot of years. So my family had a lot of children while I was waiting to have children. And it never, ever bothered me that my siblings were growing their families because I wanted them to have kids. And they were very good about including me. And I could choose what I wanted to be involved in. But because of the way they handled it, it was fine. I had friends who didn't want to tell me when they were going to have a baby. And so I felt like they were trying to keep stuff from me. That is the wrong thing to do. And my sister, when she got pregnant, she called me. She called me before she called my mom. She called me before she told her in-laws. And she said, look, I'm pregnant. I'm going to announce. I'm giving you warning so that you can prepare yourself. And I appreciated that because I was happy for her and I was glad that she was having a baby. But, you know, when you get surprised with news like that, you don't know how you're going to react. So she gave me a space so that I could process and I was fine with it. I had other family members who tried not to tell me, but like, of course you find out. I would not recommend that. That was hurtful instead of being helpful. I mean, they didn't want to hurt me, but by excluding me and trying to keep it from me, that hurt. So don't do that.
I think that's great advice to be able to tell somebody personally, then that way they can be alone with their feelings instead of being surprised in a big group or something like that, where you don't know how you're going to react and then you're put on the spot.
Yeah.
But I totally agree with the not hiding things because I felt like that when I was going through infertility where people did that, like, oh, I don't want to hurt her feelings or make her upset. Tell her. It's like, well, nobody likes to be left out.
Yes, exactly. And I think the big thing too was I could very much separate, like, your ability to get pregnant has nothing to do with my ability to get pregnant. I know other women who it was hard for, and they didn't want to talk. They didn't want to go to baby showers. But I really felt like this isn't related to my issue. You aren't causing my problem. And it's not like there's a limited amount of babies. And if you take one, I don't get one. You know what I mean? So I never felt personally resentful for anyone who was getting pregnant. I just felt bad about the way they treated me with the news and involving me. Because I had friends who it was very hard for and they didn't want to be involved, but at the same time, they don't want to be excluded. It is a tricky balance for sure. I think always err on the side of inclusion. And if you can give someone a heads up or a warning or just prepare them for that, especially in your family, that's just a really nice consideration. Advice for people going through infertility. That's a hard one. It's really rough and take into account the stress of the medicines, the hormones that are making you a little crazy, plus the cost and the burden that is, and add into that the guilt that something is wrong and, you know, you're supposed to be able to procreate and you can't, and you feel guilt. Like, I don't think that's so not talked about. Like, I felt sad. I felt like I was missing out, but what I really felt was like guilt because it was my fault. I mean, it wasn't my fault, but it was my body that wasn't working. And so there was a chance that my husband would never be a dad and my parents would not have grandchildren from us. And I felt this huge amount of pressure and guilt that something that I couldn't do this thing that everyone's supposed to be able to do. So that's really hard. And it's very hard in the moment. I got really good advice from my doctor after our second IVF, the donor IVF that didn't work. He pulled me into his office and he said, you do not want this to become your identity. You are more than just a woman who is trying to get pregnant. And this is an all-consuming process. And it takes so much of your time and your money and everything and your emotions are so wrapped up into it. He said, I think you should take a break. I don't think you should give up on this. I think you should take a break so that you can become you again instead of a patient of mine. And he actually referenced Brooke Shields, because at the time, I guess, she had gone through infertility, and she was 10 years later still talking about it and writing books, and she'd bring it up in interviews. And he said, she's lost her identity to this fact that she did this process for so long, and that's all she can talk about now. And that was an extreme example, obviously, but I saw the value in that advice. And we did. We took a break, and we knew we were moving, and so we were just like, you know what, we're going to put this on hold for right now. And I think that was it was a turning point for me. I kind of came to peace with the fact that I might not be a mom. And it's like, I can choose to be bitter and angry and sad, or I can choose to enjoy the good life that I know I have. And that's a real simplified version, but it took a lot of prayer. It took a lot of looking into myself and realizing that even if I don't have kids, I still have worth and I still can contribute, and I can fulfill that motherhood role in other ways. I coached for a lot of years. I worked with children in different capacities. There is value in that. And I had come to peace with that before we had adopted my daughter. I had come to terms with the fact that I might not be a mom, but it is okay. And my life can still be full, but it took a long time. So I think holding on to that and knowing that you're going to get through stuff, people deal with hard things all the time. Like my mom always said, you know, I could never handle your trial. My mom had 8 children. She loved being pregnant. She had easy deliveries. Not my experience, but she said, I could never handle your trial. But my mom struggles with depression pretty badly. And I was like, no, I'll take my trial. You can have yours. And I think of people who deal with cancer and other health issues, and it's like, I can handle this. It's tough stuff is going to come at you, especially as adults, and you can get through it and you can be happy. And I just keep going and it'll work out. I never would have imagined having 5 kids in less than 7 years. And it probably wouldn't have been my choice to do it that way. But it worked out, and my kids are great. And I remember we took family pictures after my youngest was born, and I just love them. I just love them. They're just great. I'm 30 pounds too heavy. People's hair messed up. Like, there's funny things, but I love them. And my sister said, why do you love this picture so much? And I said, because we're all here. And I knew that they were all there. But I never would have, in my wildest dreams, imagined that scenario. Things work out the way they're supposed to. And I really believe that.
You've got a great story and a great attitude, and you're part of the 5 kids close in age. I think you're the third or at least the third person in like the same boat of so many kids close in age. And that's one of the reasons why I did this podcast, because I'm like, gosh, I feel so lonely in this situation of having so many little kids so close in age. And I'm like, oh, wait, I'm not alone. There are a lot of people who have the same situation that I do. So I really appreciate you coming on the podcast. Did you want to talk about me moving in next door to you?
If you're ever in Southeast Arizona, I have an Airbnb that we rent out. You can find it on Airbnb by searching for Burro Ranch, B-U-R-R-O. My husband loves animals, and especially mules, horses, donkeys. And so we have 4. We only have 1 donkey, which is they call them burros around here in Arizona. So that's why it's called Burro Ranch, even though we only have 1. We have a nice little guest house, and we rent it out, and we have a pool that you can use if you come. You should come. You really should. That would be the best surprise for Jetta.
Oh my gosh, she would die. All right. Well, thank you so much for this conversation.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Thanks for hanging out with me today. If you want to hang out some more, you can follow me on Instagram at @neighborhoodtwinmom. If you want more info on what we talked about in this episode or a transcription of the audio, head to neighborhoodtwinmom.com. If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star rating and review. This helps other people be able to find the podcast. Music for this episode was composed by Cameron Norby. Find more of his work on YouTube.
Let me start over.